We're holding on in Psachim at the bottom of page Zion, two lines from the bottom, middle of Os Yud Daled. And we started learning yesterday about the relationship and the adversarialness that there is between Tamil Chachamim and Amir Oretz. We talked about that there are different kinds of Amir Oretz for this purpose. You have the ones who just don't know how to learn, and then you have the ones who are out and out with Shoyim and maliciously go and try to harm people or whatever. Anyway, so continued on this topic. Tanya Hoyra Meir Omer, Kola Masi Bita Lama Oretz, a man marries off his daughter to an Amma Oretz Kilo Koifsa Venosna Lefne Ari. It's as if he's tying her up and putting her in front of a lion. Ma Ari Dirtis Vaichel, just like a lion is dirtis, it's food, and then it eats it. And there's a few different possibilities what dirtis means. One of them being that it claws its prey and then eats it while it's still alive. The Ainloid Boshas Ponim, and it's not embarrassed to be eating live or partially live food. Af Amma Oretz Mako Boil, the Ainloid Boshas Ponim, the same way the Amma Oretz may hit his wife and then immediately go and have relations with her without taking the time first to at least be Mephias her, to try to make her feel better. Like we learned at the end of Eruvin that even a rooster will do that to the hen, but the Amma Oretz doesn't have that mentality. The Ainloid Boshas Ponim, and he's not embarrassed to do that. So in that sense, then he's like a lion with its prey, and therefore it's not a good thing. Continues the Gemara, more about the Amir Oretz, Tanya of Elazar and Yaakov Omer, if it weren't for the fact that we need them for business, they, the Amir Oretz, would kill us. Now Rashi uses an interesting explanation of it. Even though we're saying Tzrichin Onu Lahem, we need them, Rashi says it's actually the other way around. Well, so Rashi says, for their food or for their help. Now that can mean either way. It can mean that we Tamar Chachamim depend on the Amei Oretz. They supply us with food and they give us help when necessary. And if not for that, then they would kill us. Or it could mean, but you could ask then, so what? If we need their help, how does that help? How does that help that they are not going to try to start up with us? So there is actually an explanation that Rashi means the other way around. They depend on us for certain kinds of things, in the sense that Tamar Chachamim back then, where even now, are the educated people, the Amir Oretz are not. So therefore, if they need something that requires a little seichel, then they need to resort to the Tamar Chacham. The fact is, you have on the one hand, you have the expression, the Gemara has an expression in Chulin, that the Jewish people are like a grapevine. Among others, the Amir Oretz are like the leaves, where the leaves of a grapevine don't seem to have much use. On the other hand, they do protect the grapes while they're growing, and the expression is over there, the grapes, which are the Tamar Chachamim, should be davening for the welfare of the leaves, because the leaves, if it weren't for the leaves, the grapes wouldn't exist, meaning if it weren't for the Amei Oretz, the Tamar Chachamim couldn't exist. On the other hand, for example, you have the point that the Alter Rebbe makes in Egeres Chavav in Tanya, that the Tamar Chachamim back then had fields and vineyards and whatnot of their own. It's not like they had to depend on the Amei Oretz to supply them with food. So it could be different times, different places, but it could also be, again, that sometimes the relationship was more that the Tamar Chachamim needed the Amei Oretz, and some more the other way around. And of course, it may have been bilateral. Anyway, so if not for that, Hoyu Hoyu son. Again, here we're obviously not talking about the simple kind of Amei Oretz who just never had a chance to learn. So obviously, here we're talking about the kind of Amei Oretz Rasha that we were learning about yesterday. Continues the Gemara, Toni Rav Chiya. A person learns Torah in front of an Amma Oretz and doesn't give him and the pashtos and doesn't give him the opportunity to participate. It's as if he's having relations with his arusa in his presence. The pashtos, his arusa would mean the Amma Oretz's arusa. In other words, the Amma Oretz also has a relationship with Torah. He just hasn't actualized it. So it's like an Orus Va'arusa where they have a relationship, but they haven't consummated it yet. So now when you're learning Torah in his presence and he can't participate, then it's embarrassing him. Shenema, Torah Tzivalonu Moshe Moirosha. Altikrim Moirosha. Don't read Moirosha, but the Torah is a Yerusha, because for one thing, Marusha says, after all, we say in Pirkei Avos that the Torah is not necessary. An inheritance for you, you have to work for it. So therefore, we don't want to say that the word means in the simple sense moirosha, an inheritance, but rather ela moirosa, rather the Torah is betrothed to us. Which, by the way, has a certain implication, la halacha, too, because the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, for that reason, akum she'osik b'Torah is chayiv misa, except the Gemara says he has to learn his sheva mitzvahs and the things that are relevant for that. But other than that, it's like he's boil on arusa, which is one of the sheva mitzvahs from Enoyach, that he'd be chayiv misa for. So, in other words, you have to realize, as Marashah says, right now, the Torah is only like an arusa to him. He hasn't yet actualized it. So don't be learning Torah in front of him in a way that puts him down, like this is for me and not for you. Because the fact is, it is for him as well, and you should realize that. Chidusha Ga'onim on the side of a year brings the possibility that maybe when we say Arusa Soy, maybe we don't mean the Amma Oretz is Arusa, but rather we mean the Tamil Chochem's Arusa. In other words, the same way as you have an Arusa, you still can't have relations with her yet until you're Nichnas L'chupa. So the same way over here to learn Torah in the wrong way, in other words, is as if the Tamil Chacham is boil our resource before of and not taking the time to learn and to do in the proper way. He goes further and he says that also what it means in effect, you have to think of it. You can think of it almost in a way as the Torah was the Amma Oretz's Arusa, and now he's divorced from her, and now you're going and marrying her and engaging in relations with her right in front of her first chosin. That's all the more hurtful to him. So therefore, be careful about that. Continues the Gemara. Ugdoila sina shesonin Amma Oretz es chachamim, the hatred that the Amma Oretz have for the Chachamim, like we learned yesterday about what Rabbi Akiva said, is Yosem is Sina Shasonin Oved Chachamim Es Yisrael, is even greater than the anti-Semitism that Goyim have for Jews. Even greater is the hatred of the Amma Oretz for the Tamil Chacham. Partly because, again, you know, there are these various things that we've been saying in the Gemara, putting them down, and they resent that. There is also, like we learned yesterday, Rabbi Akiva, for example, thought that the Tamil Chacham are being arrogant against the Amma Oretz. And you have, sometimes they do things like what we just said, a boil our resources upon of, so therefore that causes all these kinds of things, cause the Amir Oretz to develop a dislike for the Chachamim. Their wives even more so, among other things, one explanation is because the wives, Kedusha Gaonim brings over here on the side, from the Chidah, that one reason is because again, the Tamar Chachamim do have to keep away from the Amir Oretz because of issues of Tumah V'Tahara or whatever. The women see it more on an ongoing day-to-day basis because, for example, they see that their neighbor, an Esha Schover, doesn't visit her house, doesn't easily lend her Kalim because they're going to become Tomei, etc. So therefore, they have more reason to resent the women have more reason to resent the Tamar Chachamim. Tana, and we learn in a Braisa, Shano Pirish, Kosha Yosem Mekolon, the worst hatred of all for the Tamar Chachamim is the one who used to learn Torah and then abandon it. So among other things, it actually says he knows the full amount of what we've been saying over here of how much the Tamar Chachamim looked down at the Amir Oretz. So therefore he resents it. So therefore he resents the Chachamim. And there's other reasons as well. Among them, you know, of course, it's a psychological thing. He needs to justify, he needs to rationalize to himself why he left Torah, and it helps him to do that when he thinks that, you know, the Tamar Chachamim are a bunch of low lives anyway. I'm better off not being one. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Shisha Dvarim Nemru Ba'Amma Oretz. There are six dinim regarding an Amma Oretz. Ain Moistrin like Eidos, you don't give over to him Eidos, which means the Meiri explains, like, well, actually, Rashi explains already, that it means to call on him to witness something where later on you're going to need him to testify in Beis Din. So don't call on him for that purpose. The Ain Makablan Eidos Mimenu, and you don't accept Eidos from him, which means the Meiri says you didn't specifically call him for the purpose, but he happened to observe that. And now he's coming to Beis Din to testify, we don't accept his Eidos. Here also, with all these six things over here, there was a discussion among the Mefarshim, are we talking again about the Rosh HaAmma Oretz like we were before, and therefore the problem is he may testify falsely or whatever, or are we talking about the regular run-of-the-mill kind of Amma Oretz, and we're saying it's not that he's a bad person, but he doesn't know the dinim, so he doesn't really know to be careful and to be medactic with his edus and make sure that it's precise and make sure that he's saying things that are valid. With that said, by the way, there is a different Gemara that said, Tosfos brings it over here, that there is a different Gemara in Chagiga that said, the Gemara mentions over there the point that even though with everything we've been saying, we have to be careful around the Amei Aretz, on the other hand, you do have a consideration. The Gemara says over there, you don't want to have that every person is going to think, you know what, the Talmid Chacham don't want to have anything to do with me, I'll start my own brand of Judaism. So you want to avoid that. So therefore, in certain cases, the Chachamim made certain kolos as far as things where anyway you have an Isser only Drabbanan. So the same Chachamim who made the Isser can also relax it in certain cases. And one thing the Gemara mentions over there is the opinion of Rabbi Yossi that you could accept Eidos for an Amei Aretz. So therefore, what we're saying over here in this Braisa is not necessarily Aliba de Hilfasa. But again, you say that there it's talking about the regular kind of Amei Aretz, and here you're talking about an Amei Aretz who's a Rosha and then his Lahachis, then the two Gemaras could fit together. Anyway, the ein megalim lo soid, you don't tell him a secret because he's going to go and blab it. The ein memanan osap patrupas ala yisoimim, you also don't appoint him as a trustee to take care of the affairs of yisoimim. Again, if it's the rosha kind of amaoretz, then we're concerned that he may go and play fast and loose with it. And even if he's a simple amaoretz, some of them mafarshim say he still maybe moda heto la'atzmo, like to think, you know, I worked so hard and I deserve to skim off a little for myself, and not realizing that there's strict dinim about it, and the Gemara in Gittin has all those dinim about what the apotropos is allowed and not allowed to do with the money of the assignment. Next, the imamana knows apotropos al kupa shel tzedakah. You also don't appoint him as a trustee over the tzedakah fund of the community. Like we learned yesterday, the gabori tzedakah have to be very, very upright, erlicha people, and he's not in that category. And you don't accompany him on the road or be accompanied by him on the road, like we learned yesterday, because he's not careful about his own life. He doesn't understand the value of Torah. So who says he's going to be careful with yours? Some say you also don't announce when he lost an object. Now, the question is, everybody asks, how are you supposed to know whether this object that you found belongs to an Amei Aretz or not? First of all, Rashi explains that the point is, the Pasuk says, the reason why it doesn't apply to an Amei Aretz, because the Pasuk says, Avedas Achicha, and an Amei Aretz who's acting the way we're talking about is not called Achicha. But practically speaking, when you find a lost object, how are you supposed to know whether it belongs to an Amei Aretz? So there's a lot of different answers. Tosfos gives an answer. Let's say you saw a group of Amei Aretz walking by, and you saw one of them drop something. So you don't know specifically which one it belongs to, but you know it belonged to an Amei Aretz because you know it belonged to an Amei Aretz because those were the only people in the group. Hakosev gives a different point. He says ein machrizin al avedasa. It just means, in other words, that it means that you don't go and check and investigate carefully about it. You have, the Gemara tells us in Bava Metzia and Eila Metzias, that when you're announcing back, Bizman Shabbos Mikdash HaYakayim, they would announce on the Sholosh Regolim, each one, they'd announce, the guy would go to the Evan HaToyin over there, the central lost and found of Yerushalayim, and make the announcement. He did it on each of three Yom Tovim, and then after the last Yom Tov, for 7 days, to give a person a chance to go back home, see if he's missing anything, and come back. So here, when it's an Amei Aretz, it's Aveda, then you don't have to go to that much trouble about it. You pronounce it, but you don't have to really make a big deal about it. Marsha says another point. It could be, for example, you find, for example, something. Now you have various Gemaras. We don't in Shabbos, for example, a Talmid Chacham is not supposed to go with clothes that have stains on them or with shoes that have patches on them under certain conditions. So if you find stained clothing like that or shoes with patches like that, then you know they belong to an Amei Aretz because a Talmid Chacham wouldn't wear such things. Ben Yoyada makes another point as well. He says if you find it in a neighborhood of Amei Aretz. So there's a lot of possibilities how you might have a good idea that it belongs to an Amei Aretz. So again, Tosfos and a number of the Mefoshim say over here, we don't mean you don't return it at all. You certainly can't steal from him, but you don't have to go that extra mile to go and return it to him. Anyway, that's only Yeshua, I mean, the Tanakama. So what is the Tanakama answer to that? He says, Zimnin d'nofik bro zara mal yaminei. True, he himself is an Amei Aretz and maybe even a Rosha, but he may have a son who's good, v'ochale, and he will end up being able to have this Metziah. So the father himself may not be worthy of returning it to, but his Yoshim eventually may be. Umikayim be'mashenema, yochin Rosha, v'tzadik yobosh. So you'll have coming true, and in real life, what you have in a pasuk, the Rosha prepares, for example, a suit of clothing, and the tzadik ends up wearing it. Marsha, in fact, refers over here, this Gemara is also at the end of Bava Kamma. The Gemara talks over there in particular about a moister. So we know you're allowed to kill a moister, like we talked about yesterday. But are you allowed to damage or steal his property? And the Gemara makes the same point over there. His son may be a better person and he deserves to have it, so you can't do that. The Marsha points out over there, if you look at the context of the psukim there in Iyah Peret Chof, you'll find, for example, it is not only is it talking about a Rosha, but it's talking about a Rosha where, for example, the psukim say nobody's going to mourn his death. But even so, Yochin Betzadik, the Pasuk doesn't even say Rosha, just says Yochin Betzadik Yobash, he will prepare, and the Tzadik ends up wearing it. So in other words, as much as he himself may have been a lowlife, and everybody's happy to see him gone, nevertheless, though, his children may be a lot better, and they deserve to have what he stored up in the world for them. Okay. At the end of the Perek, now the last Mishnah of the Perek I talked about, you have two. We talked about the case where a person has left home to go to accomplish a mitzvah, and then he remember on Erev Pesach, and he remembers those chametz at home. When does he have to go back to burn it? When can he just continue and just be mevatel the chametz? In a similar vein, the Mishnah talks about, suppose you have a person who left Yerushalayim, and he realizes that he still has meat of kodshim with him, which has to be burnt. So under what circumstances do you just burn it where he is versus under what circumstances does he have to return to Yerushalayim and burn it? So the Mishnah deals with, depends how far away he is from Yerushalayim, basically. So that leads the Gemara into a little agadah over here about the size of Yerushalayim will osid lovely. Pasuk says in Zechariah, first the Gemara is going to dash in some psukim from Zechariah Perek Yudalad talks about all about Melchemes Gog Magog, and then about the aftermath after that. So first the Gemara is going to darish in. First the Gemara is going to darish in some sukkim, one pasuk from that section, and explain it, and about how things are going to be lost in Lavi versus how they are now. And then the Gemara is going to continue with a pasuk over there that tells us that, which we're going to darish in to talk about the size of Yerushalayim lost in Lavi, which is more directly related to what it says in the Mishnah. So the pasuk says, "V'hoya b'yomahu, I will be on that day after Melchemes Gog u'Magog, or during it, lo ye'or yekores v'kiporin. There will not be light yekores v'kiporin." Now, what does that mean? My or yekores v'kiporin? So on the pasuk, Rashi explains over there that yekores means a bright light. That would be a bright light. Yukores and Kiporin both mean a kind of dim, cloudy light. So Rashi explains over there, based on Targum Yonason, means it won't be a bright light. It'll just be like a dim light. The Radak and Mitzudas explain over there, it'll be like a day when you're not sure whether it's day or night. The Mitzudas, David says over there, it'll be at the time of Melchemes Gog u'Magog, the Jewish people aren't going to be sure. Are we about to come out into the light, or are we going to be Chas v'Shalom in the opposite? So, but anyway, the Gemara is going to darshan the phrase differently. It refers to a light that is precious in this world. Yoker meloshin precious. But it's very lightweight. So Rashi explains we're talking about Poshet, the light of the sun. Right now, this light, the light of the sun is very, very important and very precious to us. But compared to have the light that there'll be lost in love, it'll be the kippurin, it'll be kofri. Rashi explains that the word kofa is an Aramaic root that means to float. When something floats, it means it's lightweight. So therefore, it means it'll be something floating and insubstantial and lightweight compared to the tremendous outpouring of light of light that will have lost in love. As we know, Urachama Yeshiva Saim and all that. Marsha brings from the Aruch that it means not just the Gashmi stick of light, but more to the point, the Ruchni stick of light. And the word Yoker doesn't just mean precious, it also means hard to get. As you find, for example, Dvar Hashem Haya Yoker by Yom Mahim. So the secrets of Torah that are very difficult to understand and to achieve nowadays will be very lightweight and very, 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 very obvious, very, very simple to understand. We'll also love it. Rabbi Yeshua or Rabbi Yochanan Omer, Elu Negoim Va'olos. It refers to the dinim of Negoim Va'olos, which are very complicated areas of halacha. She Yekores Hen Ba'olam Hazeh. They're very heavy and they're very weighty. In Olam Hazeh, they're very difficult to understand. Kfuyas Hen La'olam Habah, but they're very 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 floating and easy and insubstantial. La'asid Lavo. So according to according to the Aruch, Marsha points out, it means the effect of the Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Yochanan, is saying the same thing as Rabbi Elazar, just Rabbi Elazar spoke of it in terms of light, of the light of Torah, and Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Yochanan, is spelling out specifically what areas of Torah we're talking about. The point is, in other words, once we have the outpouring of all the course, that there'll be loss and love, then everybody will be able to understand these things. Kulam Yeduris. Rabbi Yochanan, or Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Omar, Eilu Bnei Adam, it also refers to people, Shem Yikorim Ba'olam Hazeh, who are Yikorim, again, Yikorim taking it in the sense of precious, but also in the sense of weighty. These are rich, important people, but Rashi says they're not Tovim Lamakim, they don't act in a good way relative to Hashem, so people honor them for their wealth or their prominence or whatever it is, but they'll be very lightweight and insubstantial in Olam Haba, where we'll see what they really are. We have the example of what happened to Rabbi Yosef, the son of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Ichlash, he was sick, the ithnigir, and he fainted. And Rashi says his neshama actually flew out of his body. Kihodr, when he finally returned, when his neshama returned to him, he recovered from his coma. Omale avua maichos, his father, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, asked him, what did you see, Lamaila, when your neshama went there? Omale, he says, olam hofuch ra'isi. I saw an upside-down world. El yonim l'matim tachtonim l'mayla. The ones who are above, the ones who are higher up in this world are below down there, and the ones who are below down here are up above over there. So it's upside down. It's backwards compared to the way it is in this world. Tosfos elsewhere brings an interesting point that specifically what Rabbi Yosef had seen was now in our world, Shmuel was the Rebbe and Rabbi Yehuda, the Amora, learned by him. And we have hundreds of places in Shas where Rabbi Yehuda says something in the name of Shmuel. But in Gan Eden, it's the other way around. Shmuel is a Talmud by Rabbi Yehuda. Now, why is that? Tosfos brings over there because we have a story that we learned in Masechta Shabbos where one time, Rabbi Yehuda was sitting and learning by Shmuel, and a woman came with a complaint against somebody else, and Shmuel was ignoring it, and Rabbi Yehuda asked him, why are you ignoring it? There's a pasuk that says you're not supposed to ignore such things, and Shmuel tells him, Ma'ukva, who's the Reish Galusa, this is his department. She should be going to him, he being the Reish Galusa, and being the head of the Beis Din, rather than to me. So nonetheless, though, since Rabbi Yehuda had the breakite, and with all the tremendous respect that he had for his Rebbe, and the Gemara mentions in Nida, for example, that he had such a pachad for his Rebbe that he wouldn't have normal bodily functions and normal bodily reactions when he's around Shmuel, but he summoned up the courage to ask Shmuel, how could you do that when it's against the pasuk? For that, he has this chus, la'asid lavoi, that he gets to be, or in Gan Eden, that he gets to be Shmuel's Rebbe. Anyway, Omalei, so Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi answers Rabbi Yosef, Bni, Olam Boru Ra'isa. What you saw is a clear world. What you see over there is the way things are taka supposed to be, because like we said, you have people who are very greatly honored in this world, but in the Olam Ha'emes, we know that they're really not worth much and vice versa. So he asks him, Va'anan Hechi Chazitin and Taman, what about us, meaning Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi himself and his Chaverim, how did you see us over there, in what position? Amalei, so Rabbi Yosef says, Ki heichi dechashvin and hacha, chashvin and hasam. We're the same importance that we're given in this world, we're given la'asid lavei. People do recognize the importance of Talmid Chachamim, there's a Gemara in Shabbos that implies that the Jews of Eretz Yisrael were much better at that than the Jews in Babel, in recognizing and honoring the Talmid Chachamim among them. So the same kind of honor that they give us in this world is the same kind that we're destined for in the Olam Ha'emes. And Rabbi Yosef continues, V'shamaiti shahoyu oimrim, I also heard while my neshama was up there that they were saying, Ashrei misha bolakan v'talmudu b'yodei, happy is the person who comes here to Gan Eden and his learning is in his hand, meaning that he hasn't forgotten. The simple meaning means that he hasn't forgotten it. So that's a very great thing. There's also explanations that it means, for example, talmudu b'yodei, that he actually practiced what he learned. But the most simple meaning is it means Talmud b'yade. The Gemara in Moed Katan, for example, tells a story where Rav Ashi meets up with the Malach HaMavis, and then Rav Ashi asks for an extra 30-day extension because he says, I want to review my learning one last time because Ashi Mishabalakan, the Talmud b'yade, and the Malach HaMavis granted that. So Rabbi Yosef continues, I also heard there in Gan Eden that they were saying, Ashrei Haruge Malchus, happy are those who were executed by the government, by the Roman government. She'en ko bria yecholah lamed b'mechitzasam. No human being can stand in the same mechitza, in the same area of Gan Eden as them. So the Gemara asked, Man Ninhu, which Haruge Malchus are we talking about? Ilemer Rav Akiva v'chaverov, do we mean the Asora Haruge Malchus, Rav Akiva and all his great colleagues, the great Tamina Chachamim? What, Mishum da Haruge Malchus v'tuloi? Are you telling me the only advantage is because they're Haruge Malchus? Just the fact that they were tremendous Tamina Chachamim is enough to grant them a unique place in Gan Eden that nobody else can approach. In fact, Marsha in Baba, this Gemara is also in Baba Basra. Marsha explains over there that after all, we know the Gemara tells us elsewhere in Baba Basra that every tzaddik has a mechitza of his own in Gan Eden. So automatically, he has a special area of his own in Gan Eden. So automatically, Rav Akiva v'chaverov ain kol bria yechol likonis b'mchitzasam. So what lamed b'mchitzasam? So what are we calling over here specifically because they're haruge malchus? Ela haruge lud. So rather, the answer is we're talking about the haruge lud. So Rashi brings from the Gemara in Tainis that said one time the emperor's daughter was found dead. And the emperor, being an anti-Semite, was claiming that his name was Tarchinus, in English he's called Trajan, blamed all the Jews for it and was going to go and then have everybody carry out pogroms against the Jews. Two brothers named Lulianus and Papus took responsibility for it. They claimed that they had killed her. And the Gemara tells over there a whole debate that they had back and forth. The emperor says, I know what you're doing. You guys probably think that Hashem is going to save you like he saved Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah. And they tell him, no, we're not such tzaddikim as they were. You're not of the caliber of Nebuchadnezzar, where at least after that he recognized the Eibishter's power. But if you kill us, you should know the Eibishter is going to get back at you. And he went and killed them. And then the Gemara, actually, there's two different versions, did he actually kill them or not? But anyway, then the Gemara says that a couple of ministers came from Rome and beat him to death with sticks and crushed his head with sticks. So he got what was coming to him. Some say it wasn't Trajan himself, but rather a governor that he had appointed who was in Eretz Yisrael by the name of Kitos, whatever. The point is that these people were saying over here, they were killed in Lud on Mesiras Nefesh to save the whole Jewish people. Actually, the Gemara calls the place not Lud, but Lud Kiya, which is a city in North nowadays Turkey. Anyway, so they were the ones, they don't have necessarily that they have tremendous chosim to get them a special place in Gan Eden, except for the fact that they're Haruge Malchus and they went on Mesiras Nefesh to save the Jewish people. HaKosev brings from the Ran a different explanation that these Haruge Lud are people who one time during a Shmad, the Goyim were trying to force Jews to act like Goyim, and we know the halacha is that at times like that, you have to go on Mesiras Nefesh, afilo arkasa de Mesana, even if the Goyim are just forcing Jews to wear different kind of shoelaces, the Goyish style rather than the Jewish style. Here in particular, they wanted him to drink out of a certain kind of colored glass cup. And that would be, maybe it was a ritual of Avodah Zarah, whatever it was, doesn't really matter. The point is, they were trying to force him to do it, as that this way, it shouldn't be, this way he would be following in their goyish ways, and these Haruge Lud didn't want to do that, and that's the enormous Mesiras Nefesh that they had, for which they have this unique place in Gan Eden. Okay, so now the Gemara continues with another pasuk in that chapter in Zechariah, which talks about the size of Yerushalayim, how Yerushalayim is going to be expanded. And it will also love it. Pasuk says, "By Yom Hahu, on that day after Mashiach comes, Yia al Mitzilos Hasus Kodesh LaHashem. There will be on the Mitzilos of the horse. It'll be Kodesh LaHashem. So my al Mitzilos. So what does that word al Mitzilos mean? So the simple meaning of Mitzilos, and that's how the Mefoshim on the pasuk explain it, is it means bells. And the Gemara, in fact, is going to give Rav Elazar is going to give such an explanation. But first, the Gemara brings a different explanation. Amar Rav Yishur ben Levi. He's going to say the word metzilos is related to the word sail, which means a shadow. So ad shav osid hakadosh baruch hu lahosif al Yerushalayim, Hashem is going to add to the size of Yerushalayim ad shah shasus rotz umetzal, the amount that can go until the point from the beginning of the morning that a horse will run until it casts a shadow directly underneath it. Meaning, in the morning, your shadow is very long and it's next to you. As the day goes by and the sun gets higher and higher in the sky, your shadow shrinks and becomes more and more under you. Eventually, you come to the point when your shadow is almost direct, when there's barely any shadow at all, and whatever it is directly underneath the horse or whatever other object. In Yerushalayim itself, the sun is never exactly overhead, but it's close enough. So the point is, Rashi brings this from Rabbeinu Mochir, who was a brother of Rabbeinu Gershom Moir HaGoyla. This Rabbeinu Mochir wrote a dictionary he wrote a dictionary of the Gemara, similar to the Aruch. Very little of it has survived, but we have quotations of it here and there in Rashi and in other places. Anyway, so the point is, therefore, so imagine you have a horse starts running first thing in the morning, and it continues running until the middle of the day, until Chatzos. That distance that the horse will cover is the direction that is the amount of distance that your shalayim will spread in every direction. And the point is, Maharsha says, first of all, so this means there'll be a much greater area for eating Kodshim Kalam and Maaser Sheni, which have to be eaten within the walls of Yerushalayim. Also, Maharsha says, practically speaking, who's going to be able to build such a big wall to surround that area? And the answer is, as the Pasuk says, we say it in Tisha B'Av davening, Vani Eyalo, Choy Maseish Saviv, Nu Hashem. Hashem says, I will be a wall of fire around Yerushalayim, so Yerushalayim can be hundreds of miles in size, and they'll still be able to be encircled with a wall. You think about it, by the way, I was curious, I looked it up, how fast a horse runs. They say like an average horse might run 30 miles an hour. You can train it to run like maybe even 40 miles an hour. So if you're talking about the amount that the horse runs in 6 hours, you're talking your shalayim is going to spread like 200 or more miles in every direction. There's a different place, by the way, there's a medrash that brings a different pasuk from Zechariah that mentions your shalayim and domestic together, and there's a medrash that actually brings it on the pasuk there in Zechariah that says that your shalayim will spread as far as domestic. So that fits, which is Damascus in Syria. So that fits very well with our Gemara over here, that your shalayim is going to be hundreds of miles in size. Anyway, so that's one explanation of Metzilas. So the point is, Al Metzilas Asus, in the area that's covered until the horse's shadow is underneath it, all that area is going to be part of Yerushalayim, and is all going to be Kodesh Lashem. Rabbi Lazar Omer, Metzilas means bells, says Rabbi Lazar. Kol Metzilas Shetolim LeVesus Bein Einav, all the bells that people hang between the eyes of their horse as a nice way of decorating the horse. All of those, Yeh Kodesh Lashem, all of those will be Kodesh. People will donate them to the Beis Hamikdash. Maharsha points out that, first of all, the word in that case, how does the word Metzilos come to mean bells? So the simple meaning Rashi brings, like you have the word Metziltayim, which means symbols that make a clanging sound. You also have, for example, in the Halalukas, Halalur Metziltzle Shama, Halalur Metziltzle Trua, which means also a kind of symbols or instruments like that make a noise. But the Maharsha says also Metzilos might be also, again, Meloshon Tzel, in the sense you put those bells on the horse also to shade its eyes from the sun. So the idea is, in other words, that people will be donating even those things to the Beis Hamikdash. Ben Yehoyada points out, nowadays, why do people decorate their horses? Because they like to ride them for fun. But La'asid Lavi, people aren't going to be riding their horses for fun. They're going to be spending their time constantly in the Beis Hamikdash. Therefore, they don't need bells on their horses, and therefore they'll donate them to the Beis Hamikdash. Rabbi Yochanan says, he goes back to what Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is saying, that Metzilos is Meloshon Tzel, Meloshon Shadow. So it means Kol Biza Shebozes Yisrael Ad Shal Shasus Rotzu Meitzal, all the plunder that the Jewish people are going to take as spoils from Melchemes Gog and Magog, everything that they can collect during the half a day from the first thing in the morning until Chatzos, and again until the time when the horse casts a shadow underneath it, Yia Kodesh Lashem, all of those spoils will be brought as donations to the Beis Hamikdash. So we have three different ways of understanding Metzilos Asus. So the Gemara says, Bishlem Lamanda Amokol Biza. I understand, according to the opinion, that the Metzilos Asus refers to the huge amount of plunder that is going to be donated to the Beis Hamikdash. So, Hainu Dechtiv, that explains the continuation of the Pasuk, which talks about the tremendous riches that will exist at that time. That the pots in the house of Hashem will be like the mizrokim, like the basins that are used for the blood of the korbanos in front of the mizbeach. Meaning, in the first and second Beis Hamikdash, the siros, which are the pot, whether it means the pots to cook korbanos, whether it means the pot that they use to remove the terumas hadeshin from the mizbeach, were made out of copper. Meanwhile, the mizrokim, in which they caught the blood of the korbanos, were made out of gold and silver. La'asid lavei, even the simple pots that are used for cooking or for removing the ashes from the mizbeach, were made out of gold and silver. So therefore, so the first half of the pasuk goes with the second half, because there'll be so much gold and silver and everything else that's donated to the Beis Mikdash from the plunder, then therefore they'll be able to afford to make even the lowliest kelim in the Beis Mikdash out of gold and silver. But according to the other two opinions about the size of your shalayim, or about the bells between about the bells that were that used to be used to decorate the horses, my v'hoya asiris kamizrokim, then what does the second half of the pasuk have anything to do with the first? Which Rashi says, okay, you know, they're going to be donating the horses' bells, but come on, from horses' bells, you're not going to get such tremendous riches in the Beis Mikdash that you're going to be able to make the pots out of gold and silver. The answer is miltachri tikama. You're right. According to that, you would have to say the pasuk is saying a separate thing. It's two separate things. Number one, your shalayim is going to be much bigger than it is, or that they're going to be donating their horses' bells to the Beis Mikdash. And number two, a separate thing. The Navi is saying you should know also there will be tremendous riches over there, that everything can be made out of gold and silver. So we'll continue with that tomorrow. And we'll continue with that tomorrow, Best Hashem, and continue darshaning the rest of the pasuk and some other pasukim over there from that section in Zechariah. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola, Chof Elul. So the Rebbe writes in a letter, this is shortly after the Friedrich Rebbe's Estalkos, we have to know, this is Pesach Sheni, we have to know very clearly that every action that we do and every effort that we put in to do our Fatzah Samayonas Chutzah enlightens up the darkness, lights up the darkness of the Golos, and brings Bias Mashiach and the Gilui of Mashiach closer. There's no words to describe how difficult even one more moment in Golos is, and therefore how precious it is to have one extra moment of Gilui Mashiach. Okay, starting Siman Ayin Aleph in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, which is Seder HaLaila. Now that we talked about the dinim of Ma'ariv, so now there's the dinim of what a person should do at night after he's davening Ma'ariv. So after davening Ma'ariv, a person has to set up time to learn Torah, or Gisav Yom of HaLaila. Now, at night, if you first have supper, then you're going to get tired, and a person naturally tends to want to remain at rest. So therefore, you don't end up. So therefore, make you time to learn before you eat dinner. But if you're hungry and you're feeling weak because you didn't eat enough during the day, then fine, eat a little fabaisin so you can feel a little better. Then learn and then eat a proper dinner. Furthermore, Chazal say, we learned this in Erevin not long ago, Loi Ivri Leila Elo Girsa, the night was created only to learn Torah. Now that means primarily the winter nights. Why did Hashem make that sometimes of year you have such long nights? So you should have lots of time that you're not working to learn Torah. But even on the shorter nights, you also have to learn a little by night, because Rav Gisa Yom Leila. And then from Chamisha Osaba Av and onward, you add a little bit of time. Then you have the quotations that the Gemara says, that Rish Lakish says a person learns Torah by night, chut shel chesed nimshachol b'yom, there's a thread of grace that Hashem brings over him by day, yom mitzava Hashem chasta over laila shira imi, because b'laila shira imi, by night, Hashem's song of Torah was with me, therefore yom mitzava Hashem chasta. And then another explanation, another version of Rish Lakish is it's olam hazeh versus olam haba, because olam hazeh is compared to the night and olam haba to the day. There's a vote on that. I think we mentioned this when we learned the Gemara, that you have a person learns Torah by night, doesn't get much sleep. He may look, his eyes are baggy and he doesn't look so good, but nevertheless, the Eibishter puts a chut shel chesed on him that people consider him good and everything. Be that as it may, Mekol Shekin, if a person has a regular time to learn by day, and for whatever reason he couldn't do it by day, he certainly has to make that up by night.